The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
If you just see a body posture online and you're not really intending to do yoga, you're not at a formal yoga class, and you don't say in your mind, I'm going to intend to do yoga, then you're probably not opening it up to it. Once you put your intent behind it, then you start to participate in these Hindu rituals.
Okay.
I mentioned before, Kali pose. If you go on Yoga Journal, which is the main source for yoga information in the United States, you'll find an article there that says that Kali pose, that goddess pose, as they call it, invokes Kali. They changed the name to goddess pose to make it more marketable. In the article, it actually uses the term invoke Kali. Of course, most people don't know what Kali is. Even when I was doing the pose and they called it Kali pose, I didn't know who Kali was. But if you just Google her, you'll see a very fierce goddess with a necklace of severed human heads and a loincloth of severed human arms, triumphantly standing over a decapitated corpse that she's just topped off the head of.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, have you ever wondered about yoga? That was Alex Frank on the Goddess Pose. He's going to be joining me in just a moment. He spoke with Matt Fratt recently about his journey into becoming a yogi master and then discovering the truth of the Catholic faith. And I thought, this is a wonderful conversation for us to have. Look, it's the new year, right? Everybody is into, you know, getting healthy, getting into better shape. And a lot of people look at yoga as a simple method of exercise and relaxation, just purely physical, right? It's even advertised in some parishes, right? People are like, oh yeah, come to our yoga class. And as such, you know, perhaps beneficial. But there is also yoga that's a bodily discipline tied to Eastern mysticism, as you just heard him mentioning. There was a former practitioner that I was reading a little while ago, now an active Christian, and this particular person was claiming that the goal of all yoga is to obtain openness with the universe. That's also known as the process of enlightenment or union with Brahman, you know, Hinduism's highest god. The word yoga actually means union or to yoke. So if you look at this literally, as a Catholic, I would have a problem with it. But is there a middle ground? That's what I want to talk about. I mean, can we, as you heard, just simply do the stretches, right? Do the exercises, not recite the mantra. You know, not go down that Eastern mysticism highway. Is it possible? If you're into yoga, turn up the radio. You know, if you have somebody who you know is practicing, they can stream the show right now anywhere in the country or the world by going to relevantradio.com. And of course, you can visit my podcast later after the conversation is over and share it with someone. As I said, we're going to speak to a former yogi master. Alex Frank is going to be stopping by. But yeah, this is a hard issue for me. It really is. When I look at this, certain guests say, when I'm done hearing them, I'm like, oh my gosh, yoga, no way. And then I hear others, you know, they're like, okay, well, you can do the stretches, you can do the breathing. Just take a look at the past 10 years, right? Over the last decade or so, yoga, it has become just a mainstream part of American fitness. You know, all over the last 2 years, because of the pandemic, the demand for yoga equipment, I saw a stat, and it's striking. It really tells you about how the pandemic has, you know, motivated certain behaviors or areas of shopping. Yoga equipment skyrocketed 154%. 154%. You know, they report that about 16% of the population, about 55 million people right now, practice yoga here in the United States. And you think, oh, these are young 20, 30-year-olds, right? No. 38% of them, almost 40%, 38% are over 50 years of age. Again, those numbers were quite striking to me. Sales up, yoga being practiced by a majority of people over 50. Yoga was also the most discussed topic on Instagram during the pandemic. Why is that? Can somebody explain that one to me? It has had a 74% growth in popularity. I'm sure there's lots of reasons for it. Without question, it's a profitable industry. The average person practicing yoga here in the States, the number to me is just mind-boggling. Again, I'm throwing numbers at you just because I was so struck by them. The average person practicing yoga, this study said, in the U.S. spends nearly $63,000 during their lifetime. And you're like, no way. How does that happen? $63,000, Drew. That's ridiculous. Well, if you think about the classes, the workshop, the accessories, all that goes into it, if you're a serious, you know, yoga practitioner, then clearly you're going to spend some money. 54% of yoga practitioners report that yoga helps them release tension. You know, you've got to wonder if the other 40%, 6% don't because of how expensive it is. I don't know. Who knows? I mean, and I'd love to hear your experiences with it. We're going to open the phones in a minute. The number here, of course, 888-914-9149. Love to get your take. But as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus Christ, as a Catholic, there's a big question. And this is what I always try to throw because I think we can look at all of the events that swirl around us through the eyes of our faith and try to interpret these things. Like, what's the right approach to these practices? The big question for a lot of followers of Christ is how compatible yoga is with the faith. And as I said when I began, there are people who say, no problem. And I've had colleagues on the air who I've heard say, you know, it's just if you just do the stretches, it helps you stay limber. If you do the deep breathing, you're fine. Right? You're okay. And then there are others, guests who've been on programs, that when they look back at the origins of it, they say, look, there are spiritual dangers to this. Stay away. So today we're going to dive into it. We're going to try to get some answers for you. As I said, you're always welcome to join us. Alex Frank is one of those experts. He was raised in a secular Jewish household, and he actually started to look for a more spiritual experience while serving as an officer in the Army. And somebody there introduced him to yoga, and he became pretty good at it. He became actually a regular practitioner. He became a yogi. But there were warning signs along the way that, well, he eventually took heed of those, and I'm glad he did. He ended up becoming a Catholic a couple years ago, and it's just a delight to have him here with us. He actually has a law degree from Yale, very intelligent guy, just moved to Denver to start a master's program with Augustine Institute, and he's here to share his story. Alex, it's good to have you with me today. Thank you for making time for us.
Hello, Drew. Thank you for having me on.
I'd love to hear some of your story. I mean, maybe we can start there because I'd like to know what the attraction that yoga held for you and how you got into it and what some of those warning signs were.
Sure. I started that journey right after graduating from undergraduate. I got a bachelor's degree in physics, which was very good. I got a good education, but I realized that there was a lot missing in my approach to life. That was especially important because I was about to lead soldiers in life or death situations without really knowing why I was asking them to take these risks and how to do it. So I undertook a wide-ranging search for truth, and the person that first appealed to me is this Zen Buddhist philosopher named Ken Wilber. He seemed to have a really good approach to understanding these things in a way that was very technically rigorous, but also didn't make any real ethical demands. It seemed more tolerant and inclusive. So I was very drawn to that. And later on, I got into yoga, especially because of problems with my back.
I'm assuming it helped.
Oh, it did help a lot with my back problems. Yes, I was in Ranger School and also had a deployment in Afghanistan. That created a lot of just imbalances and tension. So, like you said, it certainly did help to release tension, but I started to see that it also induced some other changes.
Yeah, and that's what I'm curious about. I mean, because honestly, I think it's great for stretching, breathing, relaxation, balance especially. I was quite amazed by the number of people now practicing and even the age demographic. It's not some 20, 30-year-old, but it's people a little bit 50 years and older. So we know the medical and the physical benefits of it. I mean, a lot of people can make the case for it. What did you see that were red flags or began to give you warning? Because you ascended pretty quickly. You became a yogi master, and to depart from that path after achieving such excellence and such heights in the practice of it, to me, is always amazing. Tell us the rest of your story.
I wouldn't quite say I was a master. I did attend a teacher training. I did a few retreats. I had a very good spiritual director. I spent 3 months in a Zen monastery, and I studied the theology in depth. Mm. So I did learn a lot about it. And especially in my last 2 years practicing, I had just as good of a spiritual director as there is in yoga, I think.
Wow.
He was very rigorous and gave me a lot of very diverse practices. But the first thing, the first red flag that came up was I just realized that there's a certain set of assumed beliefs behind the practices they were giving me. I was reporting to my spiritual director the spiritual issues that I was having and the spiritual trials, and then he was giving me practices. But I realized that the practices assume a certain worldview, and then for the practices to be effective, you also need that worldview as well. And they actually started to induce some changes in my soul. I noticed myself having more detachment from everything and cultivating a sense of impersonal consciousness, as they call it. So I wanted to understand why I was doing these practices more and what these changes were they were inducing in my soul.
Well, share some of those. What were you encountering?
So the first basic, most important aspect of yoga that I found is that it's all centered around consciousness. Mm-hmm. That is their central belief in everything, and the practices only make sense in that light. Even if you go to a normal yoga class, they'll chant the divine mantra, as they call it. That is to invoke what they consider to be the supreme deity, which is consciousness. That's what Om refers to. Right. And then just the general attitude in the classes, they aim to deconstruct the ego in order to realize more of this impersonal awareness. Or in yoga, it's a more personal, God-centered awareness. In Buddhism, it's more impersonal. And I started to see, first, I felt a little deceived because I started to see that this is actually a major change in mentality. They say they're not trying to convert people. They say they're not trying to change their viewpoints, but really this is a drastic change in how to approach things. Consciousness is very limited. You can be aware of something but have no idea what to do with it. It's one thing to be aware of something. It's another thing to interpret it correctly. It's another thing to form an intention towards it. And then it's a fourth thing to actually actualize that intention.
Yeah, you know, I'm struck by the practice. I want to go to the phones. I'll grab a few calls in a second here. But I want to get back to what you said about the mantra, Om.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, you know, my wife and I, we lived in another state. My wife went and took these yoga classes, you know, at the gym or wherever the heck it was, right? And whenever they would do their mantra, she would never do it. She would recite the word Jesus. So, you know, we want to be careful about what we're yoked to. And as I was mentioning, the word yoga means union or yoke. And one of those common words in yoga is the word namaste, right? Which means I bow to the God within you. And then you recite this, you know, you chant that in many of these yoga classes. And it's my understanding is meant to bring students into a trance so they can join with the universal mind. And you know, the salute to the sun posture is used at the beginning of a lot of those classes. It pays homage, you know, to the Hindu sun god. I mean, there's a lot of these poses and practices that people aren't even aware of. I mean, they go in it and they figure, oh, this is what you have to do. If they don't have a knowledge of what they're doing, you know, in terms of worship or paying homage, how dangerous is that for those particular individuals? And what do you see as the spiritual danger to that?
Definitely. So Jon Kabat-Zinn is the founder of modern mindfulness. He's a professor of psychology, I believe. And he actually says that mindfulness is not secular. He says, quote, "I assiduously avoid using the word secular because once you do that, you abstract the sacred out of it." Mm-hmm. Some of his followers are not so subtle. They actually call it self-Buddhism. And mindfulness uses a lot of these asanas, the same ones from yoga as well. I mentioned in the intro clip Kali pose as one of the more tangible ways that they bring in a lot of, that these things are rooted in Hindu religion.
Right.
There's there's that, and then there's many other things. And you're right to say that the poses are actually reverencing Kali and other Hindu gods and goddesses. Another one is warrior pose, which is named after Virabhadra. He was basically a hitman hired by Shiva, the main yoga god, to gain vengeance on Shiva's father-in-law. Shiva's father-in-law had upset Shiva's wife such that she actually committed suicide. And then so Shiva created Virabhadra in order to kill his father-in-law. Mm-hmm. And the pose is actually reenacting what Virabhadra did when he killed him. The first one is him sprouting out of the ground near his target. Warrior two is him focusing on his target. And then warrior three is lunging at his target in order to decapitate him.
Wow. Fascinating. Let's do this. We'll grab a few telephone calls. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in right now. The number's 888-914-9149. Maybe you practice yoga. Maybe you're concerned. Maybe you think it's innocent. My guest today, Alex Frank, he is a former yogi practitioner and has an amazing story of having gone from not only studying and being in a Buddhist monastery to now becoming a very devout Catholic. Kathy is listening in Tampa, Florida. She's got a comment or a question for you, Alex. Kathy, hi, you're on the air with Alex Frank.
Hi, I'm long-time listener, first-time caller.
Great. Good to have you.
My question is about Tai Chi. I don't have anything to do with yoga, but I have been doing Tai Chi for a few years.
So, you know, go ahead. Why don't you explain Tai Chi? You're tapping into is that where you tap into the chakra and the energy channels?
Well, I don't know about that, but... It's a form of exercise to me. That's all. It stretches all your muscles here and there and everywhere, it really helps me. Some of the exercises help you. You get up out of a chair more easily, and when you're older, sometimes that's difficult. Things like that. But
Let me let Alex respond to you, because that's an ancient Chinese practice. Tai Chi's been around for a very long time. And like yoga, it can be very relaxing. It can be good for balance and stretch. Alex, I don't know how familiar you are with it. Would you say that's safe to do, or do you have concerns like you do with yoga regarding that?
I do have concerns with Tai Chi. I don't know it as well as yoga. I certainly sympathize, Kathy, with the desire to be more healthy. That's one of the reasons why I started yoga myself, was to help gain more alignment and improve my back. There are other things like Pilates that would help with that. Now, Tai Chi comes from Taoism, which is mostly a Chinese religion. And in that, you're manipulating your subtle energies, both your emotions and other deeper currents in the soul, in order to more align it with your physical movements. Now, that does sound innocuous, but it also does have a strong dark side to it. There's teachers of Tai Chi like Mantak Chia that get into a lot of manipulation of those things for sexual, more hedonistic purposes. And actually, there was a lot of criticism in the yoga community of some of these Taoist practitioners. Mm-hmm. One of my former teachers actually called them energy vampires, because they were manipulating other people's energy for their own personal benefits.
Hmm. All right.
That sounds strange. It really doesn't connect with any of my experience with it. It's I just go to it as an exercise class, and we do there's a, like 108 moves in this Tai Chi format that we use. I've gone to workshops and things like that, and all we do is exercise. We don't really, but there is a certain amount of volunteerism that they ask for to help with the different activities that we have. Like, we will have dinners and stuff like that. And we'll have classes where, you know, workshop weekends where you do classes for 2 days straight. And but they do have, separately from that, they do have chanting, like every Saturday morning or something like that. And they encourage you to come to that, but if you don't, you don't. It's not a big deal. And I do have Catholic friends that have gone and put people on their chanting prayer list. And I've never done that because I just didn't feel comfortable with.
I agree with you. Why not just pray, right?
With that at all.
I agree. Well, to me, you're just going to chant over and over again. Why not pray? Pray to God. I mean, it goes back to this philosophy, doesn't it, Alex? Some of this stuff where we're tapping into one consciousness. When it comes to yoga and with her practice, here's the heart of this whole issue: yoga, tai chi. Can you exercise? Can you use these without the spiritual dimension? I had a woman on, I think her name was Sue Brinkman, on years ago, and she talked about this. She says the postures that they offer in yoga, those postures are offered to the 330 million Hindu gods. I was struck by the amount of Hindu gods they had. And, you know, that yoga postures really are offerings to gods. And if you do the postures, if you do the breathing techniques, if you do the meditation, then she makes the case that you are participating, you know, consciously or unconsciously in this form of worship. And she says there's a real danger in it, you know. I've got to take a break, but I love your thumbnail on this. How do you read that? Can we separate the two? Can we just say, I'm going to do this, I'm not going to do any mantras, I'm going to pray to Jesus when I do my yoga or my tai chi, and will that Christianize it, or should we just stay away from it altogether?
Yoga doesn't have a monopoly on these physical movements, but if you're intending to do yoga, then you are participating in that religious belief of trying to build some kind of group unity consciousness, or as it's otherwise called, a hive mind. Mm-hmm. So I do think that there are problems with doing it. Consider what it's like going to mass for a lot of people. A lot of people go to mass not intending to really participate in something spiritual. They just go for social reasons because they like hosting potlucks or things like that. Some Catholics don't believe in the Eucharist, in the real presence in the Eucharist, for example. And we can just eat normal bread. You know, we could eat a Eucharistic wafer that hasn't been consecrated as normal food. But once you really intend to participate in that kind of spiritual practice, then God does oblige. And in the case of yoga, other spirits do oblige you.
I agree. No, I think you are so right. I just had an email from somebody who said, you know, they went to India, visited India, and she said she saw people in the street practicing in yoga poses in front of the statues of gods, pagan idols. Exactly, she says, what Christ came to dispel. But I'm with you on the other point, we'll take a break. We'll take a few more of your calls when we come back. In yoga, they do this type of breathing. It's prana. I don't know the name. Prana, is that it?
Pranayama.
Pranayama. When I come back, I'll talk about the breathing of this. It's like chi, where we tap into this life force. If you are practicing yoga, if you've got a question or a comment, if you want to get in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. I'm talking today with Alex Frank, a great convert to the faith, achieved great levels in yoga as a yoga practitioner. We'll talk more. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Yeah, well, good afternoon and welcome. It's good to be with you today. Thanks for joining me. My team and I came across an interesting conversation with a man named Alex Frank. He was on another podcast, and he has a very interesting background, very intelligent man, but had taken the path of, I guess, Eastern mysticism. He was raised in a secular Jewish household, started looking for a more spiritual experience when he was in the military. He was introduced to yoga and became a regular practitioner of it. His journey and his conversion is an amazing one. You'll hear the rest of it, what led him out, what the telltale signs were, and why he no longer practices. He's now a very devout Catholic, and it's good to have with me Alex Frank. If you're just joining us, we are talking about yoga and whether or not it is just simple stretching exercises. And if you detach the Eastern mysticism side of this, would it be okay to use? Before I went to break, Alex, I was talking about, I guess it's pranayama, you were calling it. And prana is, my understanding, the Hindu word for life force. And that same concept from that earlier caller, there's this life force in chi, you know, it's used in some martial arts. And yoga breathing attempts to manipulate that life energy. And you know, we're not talking about oxygen, you know. We're basically talking about breathing in and out the supposed life force, these mantras we've talked about as well. There's a Vatican document on the New Age. It's called Jesus Christ, the Bearer of the Water of Life. And I would recommend any Catholic out there to check it out. You can go to the Vatican website. I think it's vatican.va, and you can download these documents and read them. What this document says, addressing the New Age movement, not just yoga, they're talking about all sorts of things. They say this, I'm going to quote them, quote, some of the traditions which flow into the New Age are ancient Egyptian occult practices, Kabbalism, and early Christian Gnosticism, the lore of the Druids, Celtic Christianity, medieval alchemy, Renaissance Hermetism, Zen Buddhism, yoga, and so on. And, you know, we have to be careful about where we cross that particular line. And, Alex, I want to go ahead and take a few more calls for you. So we can talk about this, but I'd like to, before we go any further, talk about prana and pranayama, as you point out. Mantras, this type of breathing, this type of chanting. You know, I think if you go down that path, I get nervous and I would want to stay away from that. If it's simple stretching and it's Christianized, that would be okay for me. But let's talk about the subtlety of this, because a lot of people might want to just start with the stretching exercises, but soon find themselves getting sucked into this. I think that's part of the danger too, don't you?
Oh, definitely. There's been a lot of studies that show that once people go to the yoga classes that don't have much of a spiritual side, they get more interested in the spiritual side. And then once you scratch beneath the surface, you find a lot of spiritual things. When I went to the teacher training, there were a lot of texts that we studied, for example, the 2,000-year-old Hindu text of Patanjali. Mm-hmm. So these practices really do draw on a lot of that Hindu knowledge. And you're right to link this to the occult, especially pranayama. So these are very technically sophisticated practices that seek to manipulate your life force, as you said, your life energy. These are just some of the subtle currents of the soul. Mm-hmm. Now, Pope Benedict came out with a document when he was head of the CDF, the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith, that said mm-hmm. that there's nothing wrong necessarily with doing breathing exercises per se. But the problem with these yogic ones is that then you start to participate in the spiritual reality. Right. The pranayama ones especially are aimed to open you to these spiritual realities, to reorient your body and your soul so that you're more attuned spiritually. Right. And the problem is that you're really opening, but it's not clear what you're opening to. And further, it's very focused on manipulation of your energy for your own empowerment. That starts to get very occult.
Yeah.
There are some important figures in yoga, like actually the founder of Hatha Yoga, Matsyendra and Gorakshanath. He actually used his occult powers. This is back in 12th or 13th century India. He actually used his occult powers to infiltrate a king's harem, seduce the king's wife, get into the king's wine cellar, and then also have his way with the king's harem of 1,600 dancing girls.
Wow.
And this is the founder of Hatha Yoga, which is the most popular form of yoga in the West.
That's fascinating. All right, well, let's go to the phones. We'll take a few calls. Colleen is listening in Calgary. Colleen, thanks for joining us. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Hi, Alex. I'm going to ask you guys what do you think of Soulcore?
So my understanding of that, that's basically stretching to the rosary. Am I right in that? How does that work? You want to explain it?
Does Alex know about it?
I'm vaguely familiar with it. I think that's correct, that it's stretching to the rosary.
Yeah. So I did yoga for many years, and I most likely just like to do the stretching hot yoga.
Yeah.
And I quite enjoyed it. It gave me some good relief for my soreness in my back and neck. Mm. And then I was told by God, no more. I used to put a little baby crucifix on my mat. I prayed to Jesus. He was with me in there. But then he just said, Colleen, no more. And so I had to look somewhere else. And I really found that Soulcore was a really good answer.
Yeah.
I know it's probably some priests or some parishes don't care for it, but I went and took a retreat in Florida, and I felt that it was all for the good and all for the glory of God. But
Colleen, my producer,
I don't know
Maggie,
what do you guys think of it? Maggie,
why don't you open your mic too? Maggie actually did it. Maggie, what was your experience like with Soulcore?
Yeah, I was introduced to it down in Nashville at the Cathedral of the Incarnation. They had a series of it in the evenings where there was a gal who kind of led the class, and they played you probably have seen like the DVD of it. They played it on the TV and you just followed along. It was about 30, 40 minutes and they'd pray the entire rosary, and each decade you just kind of do like a different series of stretches or exercises. And I really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. Colleen and Alex, I want to bring you into this because you're the expert here too. But to Colleen's point, I have no problem with anyone who wants to stretch and pray the rosary. You mentioned the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith's document on Christian meditation. The church distinguishes between physical postures and the philosophy or religion underlying them. And I want to take a quote from that document here because I think it's an important one to share. It says, the adoption of a particular physical posture, even if originating in a religious or philosophical system foreign to Christianity, is permissible provided the posture is severable from the religion or philosophy that first motivated it. So, reading that, I'm saying, okay, well, then you can do these yoga poses, you can do Soulcore, you can do these types of things as long as it's separated from anything that is, I guess, anti-Christian in its philosophy. It goes on to say its use becomes possible in Christian freedom. And indeed, the church has baptized even pagan practices that were not intrinsically linked to paganism. So the question of yoga becomes, to what extent can yoga postures be independent of non-Christian, religious motivations, as well as any intention to motivate, to manipulate these forces or energies? And that, to me, is the big question here, because that same question arises with Reiki, right? Or, that healing practice, which also depends on non-Christian and occult, philosophy. And I would stay away from Reiki, with a 20-foot stick. I mean, I would go nowhere near that type of thing. So if I have a choice between yoga stretches and Soulcore, I think I would choose Soulcore anytime. But the church also gives us the room to say, hey, if this can be disconnected, then you're okay to do that. Would you agree with that, Alex? Or should we stay away from it together? Because, and I'll throw one thing out, and then I want your answer. I'll give you the other side of this. There are a lot of guys like you who are former practitioners of yoga, and they make the case. They say, look, it's not possible to make this disconnect. The dangers of the occult remain, especially when you manipulate these internal forces in order to get to a certain physical state, and that's with these mantras, with this pranayama that we spoke about, some of these other things. So separating the philosophy from the posture, makes it possible for Christian use. But, I think you're walking a razor's edge there. But I'd like your take, because you're the expert. I see both positions, both views.
Sure. I think that this is actually pretty simple, which is that once you're participating in something that is clearly yoga, then that becomes problematic. You know, God is merciful to us in that he makes it generally clear when there's some kind of bad influence, and at least in the sense that he, you know, in a sense that something is clearly not Christian and has some other spiritual connotation.
Right.
Yoga actually took a lot of postures from Western gymnastics. This was done by Krishnamurti, who's the father of modern yoga, about 100 years ago. So it took a lot of secular postures and then turned them into yoga. Of course, doing those types of postures is fine as long as you don't have, as long as you're not actively participating in yoga. So doing something like Pilates, I have no problem with. Right. I think that the danger becomes once you start to have the hubris to think that you can manipulate these types of internal bodily and energetic forces in your soul.
Right.
That's what the occult likes to do, is they like to manipulate these things for their own personal empowerment. Or the other danger is to start idolizing your body. Mm-hmm. I think it's 1 Timothy that says that bodily training has some value, but training in godliness has every value. So doing these types of bodily trainings is good, but never lose sight of the fact that the spiritual side is higher.
That's really well said. Maggie Good, I know you want to jump in here. Open your mic up.
Alex, I was the one, I saw your conversation on Pints with Aquinas a while back, and I was fascinated with some of this information that you're telling us now today, too. And you just said making your body an idol, and you mentioned in part of your story that you kind of woke up when you realized that there were a lot of yoga practitioners around you that were really kind of taking advantage of that openness in people, and sort of especially on that bodily and sexual side of things, that it was just kind of running rampant, and you were like, wait, there isn't morality in this. I wondered if you could maybe talk about that and what that did to your faith or your journey of faith.
Certainly. Yoga practice just plays with boundaries in a bad way. You're twisting your body into lavish poses while wearing skimpy clothes with other people in a room. And I started to see just how that provoked a lot of unchaste thoughts in me. At the time, I didn't think that was necessarily bad, but what I did think was bad is that it distracted me and prevented me from being very present and focused and aware. So I started to notice that there was some unchastity going on, and then further, there's a problematic guru relationship that is still prevalent in that. Nowadays, they've tried to get away from that, but there's still a lot of weirdness with boundaries. So, for example, yoga teachers are constantly touching their students in intimate places, but they do it using this weird voice. And it seems to be only okay because they use this voice, which makes them appear to be as non-threatening as possible. That's sort of the softer side of what's going on. But then that does get into some really dark things. I mean, there's tons of examples of yoga gurus who were abusing their positions of power, including the founder of Hatha Yoga that I mentioned, Matsyendra and Garakshanath, who were committing murder and mass rape and things like that in order to, by using their magical yoga powers. More in the present time, you have the founder of Bikram Yoga, Mr. Bikram, who was establishing a cult-like atmosphere and using his position to abuse some of the students. If you see pictures of him, you'll see that in classes he was wearing just really skimpy clothing. And in general, in Bikram, they're in a hot room, stripped down to their underwear, bending themselves into these lavish poses. So that starts to create a lot of weird problems. And one yoga teacher actually has said that can lead to tragic self-brainwashing, that a lot of yoga gurus are happy to go along with. And you can't, it's hard to say that that's not really true yoga, because there's no set of specific ethics like we have in the church or a centralized authority that would be able to condemn those kinds of practices. And in fact, you see these strands throughout the whole of yogic history, like the founders of Hatha Yoga that I mentioned, where they're using their position of power in order to manipulate things for their own advantage.
Well, look, let me, Alex, I got to hold you for a quick second because I'm up against the clock. Let me take a short break. When we come back, if you're on hold, I'll do my best to get you on. A number of people want to join the conversation, but I am, of course, approaching the latter part of the broadcast. We're taking a look at yoga. Is it permissible for Christians? My guest today, Alex Frank, he has achieved great heights of yoga practice. No longer is practicing. He is converted to Catholicism, and we're here to answer your questions. So if you want to get in, there's one line open. I'll do my best to get your calls. Today's programming is brought to you by St. Gregory Recovery Center in Iowa. More information about their faith-centered addiction treatment is available at relevantradio.com/stgregory.
Those saints have been people who have developed themselves in every way. You know, they're not just people who were good academics, but they really led lives of holiness.
Yes.
They committed themselves entirely to God, to his truth. It's been over lots of time and culture. You know, St. Augustine was a Berber, Thomas Aquinas Italian, St. Teresa of Avila was Spanish. Those are all people cited prominently in the Catechism. It answered so many different questions. And like you said, the footnotes were so rich. I mean, I spent a lot of time just looking at the people in the footnotes.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Now, I love that. That's part of a conversation with my guest today, Alex Frank, who's gone deep into Hindu and Buddhist practices. And God is always reaching out to all of us, right? We're in this constant call to conversion, to a closer walk with him. And there was the seeds of conversion planted in his heart. He began to become very fascinated by the holiness of saints. And he discovered the richness of our Catholic faith. I know you're on hold. I'll do my best to get you. Before I go to the calls, though, I just want to give Alex the opportunity to kind of conclude his story. If you're just joining us, we're talking about yoga, how many people today are practicing it. There's a huge spike in it over the pandemic. And we're looking at whether or not it's compatible with our Christian faith, whether or not we should practice it. And Alex had been introduced to it while he was an officer in the Army and became a very regular practitioner of it and a yogi. And through the grace of God, has now ended up in the Catholic Church and has a very unique perspective on this. Alex, before time ticks away, I do want to give you the opportunity to kind of share the rest of your conversion story, how God worked in your life and led you out of this particular practice and how it's changed your worldview.
It was really by the grace of God, as you said. He put so many things in my path that built one on top of the other. And I didn't realize, of course, what was happening at the time, but now that I look back, I can see the deep wisdom of how he just put a trial or a blessing that answered whatever specific question or obstacle I had. Yoga did actually help a little bit in that it showed me the importance of the spiritual side of life, but also a lot of the limitations of yoga that we've just been discussing. It was actually my yoga teacher that first mentioned to me Christ just as sort of a role model for how to live well. He offered himself up as a total sacrifice to raise us all to the heights of truth and love. That first opened me to Christianity. I was at Yale at the time, so that was really challenging me to think more rigorously while yoga was giving me some kind of spiritual intuition into these things. Once I started to ask deep questions with a sharpened intellect and spiritual awareness, Catholicism quickly became the only answer. And a lot of the things I was hungering for in yoga, I found that the Carmelites especially satisfied them. I read The Fire Within by Father Thomas Dubé, and that helped tremendously.
Wow. So you eventually just disconnected altogether from the practice of yoga?
Yes. When I first started, I thought that it was maybe possible to find some kind of integration between them. But I soon realized that the practices themselves really do stem so completely from the theology of it, and they affect your soul in a bad way. And just being in that kind of context opened me up to bad influences that harmed my Christian upbringing, my Christian development.
Gotcha.
So I've completely severed from it, yes.
All right, well, so let me grab another call or two before we run out of time. By the way, people want to hear your story or learn a little bit more. Did you write anything about this, or is there something you'd recommend people tap into if they say, hey, I'm a little concerned, I want to know more?
I'm currently in the process of writing that. So by the grace of God, I'll have a book or at least a long article soon.
Well, that sounds great. We'll look forward to that. Charlotte is listening in Connecticut. Charlotte, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to comment. Soul Core is not a Christianized version of yoga. They have a totally different stretches and exercises and breathing and everything.
Yeah.
It isn't like yoga to the rosary. It's totally different. It's a Catholic alternate.
Awesome.
You cannot Christianize Hindu worship poses. You can't take worship poses of false gods and Christianize them. That's impossible. So it's totally different. So if someone, thinks that, that's what Soul Core is, it is not. I just wanted to make that comment.
Yeah, no, I am grateful. Maggie, open your mic again if you don't mind, because you did this, right? It has nothing to do with yoga. Am I correct in that?
Correct, yeah. I think you'd be more accurate describing it as like calisthenics or like gymnastic moves,
yeah.
Like warm-ups, that kind of thing.
All right. Sounds great. Maria in Glenside, Pennsylvania, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. I just, hopped in the car and I turned on Relevant Radio, and you're talking about this. Two of my girlfriends, real quick, we do stretching, and there's some yoga poses, but we pray to it because we know yoga is wrong. We don't do it in any group setting. It's just the three of us together, and there's certain poses that we will not do. So it's just stretching. We're all, just trying to stay in shape and to help our back and our neck and things
sure.
like that. And are we doing it all right? Like we say our intentions and we pray Our Father and two Hail Marys through each stretch that we
sure.
do. And then we say other prayers. And that's what we just want to make sure that.
Yeah. Maria, thanks. Let me hold you there because I only got a couple of minutes left. I want Alex to respond. I have no problem. I don't see anything wrong with you praying Our Fathers or Hail Marys and stretching. I mean, there's nothing wrong in my opinion with that, Alex. Do you have anything? Do you see any problem with that?
Not at all. There's actually a psalm where it's just a prayer to God asking for the wild ox's strength. So it's definitely acceptable to pray to God while you do non-yoga physical things. I think you're right, certainly, to avoid certain poses. Like, I would never do Kali pose, but like I said, yoga does not have a monopoly on some of these physical postures.
Yeah. To the other caller who called about, and she says, look, you can't separate these things. It's an interesting point. And what I was thinking of as she was saying that, can you imagine... somebody in the Old Testament saying to the God of Israel, no, God, we're only bowing, we're only prostrating ourselves to the statues of Baal, because we want to loosen up our backs or our biceps. We don't care about any of those statues in front of us, or we'll just take a little pinch here. I think it takes a lot of discernment, doesn't it, in the end, to decide what kind of exercise you're going to do, whether or not you can disconnect the Eastern mysticism from yoga. And whether it's okay to do that. I'm going to give you final thoughts. I have less than probably a minute to go.
You're absolutely right that we have to be careful in which God we chose to reverence with our actions. Modern times have made it seem like we can just do something, but because we have a subjective intent that's different than our actions, it's okay. But that's not the case. It's good to really be careful about what we reverence and what we turn our souls towards. Yoga is not a good thing for Christians to do, but physical exercise can bring a lot of benefits if it's done Christian and not with yoga, and it can be done prayerfully, like almost anything else.
Well, yeah, I want to thank you, Alex, for being here. Good to talk with you today. Good luck on that article and that book, okay? We look forward to talking again. That's Alexander Frank. You can check him out. Again, as I said, an amazing story. If you missed any of this conversation, please go to relevantradio.com. You can go to my podcast. You can download this where podcasts are available, and you can share this with somebody else who might need to see it and check it out. Hey, I want to remind you, too, before I run out of time for the day, our hashtag, all right? Check out our hashtag for life, hashtag fast for life. If you go to relevantradio.com, /fast, there is a free ebook that you can download. It's called The Choice is Love. Why not take advantage of it? So it'll be only there for a little bit of time, but check it out. Okay, relevantradio.com/fast.